This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. And by Unmanned Systems and Solutions, USAS, a combat veteran-owned company that repairs all types of drones. If you're a consumer who owns a drone, a small business using drones, or a drone manufacturer looking for sophisticated repair, distribution, and warehousing, look into USAS. For more information, visit unmannedsas.com/UAV Digest. You're listening to episode 181 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max, how are we?
Hi, David. Doing well. Lots of interesting stories this episode.
Absolutely. A lot of things to talk about. We got a bit of a 60s vibe going tonight. We're going to talk about mushrooms, cutters, flipping out, strategic human capital, and a long, strange trumpet spin.
I couldn't avoid it.
We really try not to be political on this show, and as well as on Airplane Geeks. And I have to say, it really was kind of challenging to be diplomatic on Monday night's show and being apolitical when so much of the news was revolving around our new administration. Even if you wanted to keep political, you can't not be political, right?
That's right. We try to keep it focused on Airplane Geeks to aviation, and here we'll try to keep it focused on the implications to unmanned aircraft. But forewarning, we may stray just a little bit. Hopefully we won't go down the political rabbit hole.
Yeah, and so we're going to try to be diplomatic. I think it's going to be interesting. UAVs haven't been quite affected yet, but sooner or later, they're going to get to our favorite topic. Well, the first couple of stories are mushroom-based drones eat themselves at mission's end. Our first article was from airandspacemag.com. About vanishing drones, and a little bit more about Icarus. And of course, you can't go without an acronyms. Inbound Controlled Air Releasable Unrecoverable Systems, or Icarus. Icarus was, for people who don't know, was the designer who put feathers and wax together and flew too close to the sun and fell into the ocean to die. So he was unrecoverable. Thus, we have a new drone that fits its mold.
This Icarus program is a DARPA program, which they characterize as, quote, driven by a vision of vanishing air vehicles that can make precise deliveries of critical supplies and then vaporize into thin air. Now, the idea here is that certain small items, things like batteries, communication devices, medical supplies, could be delivered to, well, either military or humanitarian teams in areas that are difficult to access. And you want to deliver the supply, the payload, but you don't want to have a drone left over that you have to send back or somehow recover. So the idea is that these drones would do the Mission Impossible thing, I guess, and self-destruct or do something to eliminate themselves. Really fascinating concept.
Very spy-ish. You know, we're going to talk a little bit later about Batman and bat drones and bat bots, but now it's DARPA, so it's espionage, you know, and military applications first. But for an environmental area if you want to send food to an environmental crisis, you don't want them to have to worry about another airplane. To having them self-destruct is kind of cool, and it's just different. It's one of those, you read it and you sort of go, okay. The industrial paper airplanes for autonomous aerial delivery is a response from the San Francisco R&D firm Other Lab. And their Apsara, which is the aerial platform supporting autonomous resupply actions.
Yeah, so they, and this is where the mushrooms come in, what they plan to do is build this little drone out of mycelium, which is a mushroom-based material. And perhaps the title of the Air and Space Magazine article is a little bit kind of a stretch when it talks about drones eating themselves at admission's end. But in this case, it would be composed of a material that would self-destruct or
decompose
at the end. Very interesting. The sort of the specifications of this DARPA Icarus project are that these drones need to be able to carry a 3-pound payload and deliver it to within 10 meters accuracy of a stated GPS location. They're small. They can be no more than 3 meters in their longest dimension. And as we've said, they must physically vanish within hours of payload delivery. So this is part of a 26-month program, this Icarus program.
And it builds on the VAPOR program, which was the Vanishing Programmable Resources program, which was developed for self-destructing electronic components. So part of this is, we also got to keep in mind that these aren't just free floating vehicles. These are directional, they're drones. They're going to be flown to whoever needs them. So the electronics inside will also need to deconstruct or decompose. So that's part of the VAPOR program. So we'll have to keep following up on the mysterious missing or vanishing drones going forward. And maybe what we'll need to do is send out the Coast Guard to look for them. What do you think, Max? Yeah,
the U.S. Coast Guard. This is from, we picked this up in SUAS News. Coast Guard conducts small unmanned aircraft system testing on Cutter Stratton. Now, the Stratton is a National Security Cutter, or NSC. And I guess, David, that means, what, like a spy ship?
No, it's a Coast Guard cutter, a smaller version. The NSC cutters are smaller versions of the standard fleet cutter that the Coast Guard uses. They're not full-size destroyers or cruisers, but there are cutters and icebreakers that are very larger. The NSC ones are small-scale, used for the coastals, not necessarily deployable outside of the ocean. But the security cutter Stratton was used to deploy a Scan Eagle UAS. Now, we've talked about Scan Eagles in the Coast Guard. They've wanted them for a while now for over-the-horizon viewing. We're going back to old school. It's like battleships in the 30s and 40s that would launch their float planes off their decks to be a spotter aircraft over the horizon for the battleship.
Now, the UAS program manager here, Jeff Bishop, he says the upcoming deployment is going to inform the SUAS for the NSC strategy, and the eventual SUAS for the NSC solution is going to inform the Coast Guard's long-term small unmanned aircraft system strategy. So the plan here is for an RFP to be issued by the end of fiscal year 2017, with the contract award planned for fiscal year 2018. And that will include a retrofit of the Stratton, if something other than the Scan Eagle is ultimately selected, and for one additional NSC. So they're starting out with the Scan Eagle. They've been testing it in order to, I guess, define for themselves more sharply
the parameters for the RFP.
Exactly, right.
We're testing so we can make a purchase, which, given budgets, it's not surprising that this is the best way to do it. And, you know, I'm sure Boeing and in situ are dying to have their Scan Eagle be part of the process.
I'm sure.
Interesting, at Pax River Museum, they have the original tilt rotor drone that the Coast Guard was looking at for their. And I'll send Max a picture of that, and we can put that in the show notes.
And we'll have some links in the show notes as well to some resources that are interesting. The U.S. Coast Guard actually has its own unmanned aircraft system page, and we'll put a link in the show notes to that, as well as some other information about this.
So cool. All right. They never go away, do they?
Nope.
Mr. Bezos is always out there looking for giving us a reason to talk about Amazon. In this case, they've got a new drone patent, and it features foldable wings for flippable flight. Wow. There's a boy, I got that off on the first shot. Foldable wings for flippable flight. All right. So it's, of course, what else would it be? A delivery drone.
That's right. It with the wings folded, it can sit on the ground or some platform or something and be stable, presumably for loading. It can then rise vertically, and then the wings and the tail unfold to more of a kind of a conventional sort of aircraft configuration, do its horizontal flight, and then as it approaches the delivery point and starts to drop down, then it can refold itself back up and then land to make the delivery.
If you don't understand that, there'll be a document from the U.S. Patent Office in the show notes. They're really trying to find the best of both worlds. You know, they want vertical takeoff and landing, and they want cruise horizontal. So this is, we're going back to the 50s again, tail sitters. You know, the Navy and the Air Force wanted tail sitters. They didn't do very well with them. So it's interesting that, you know, well, the thing, a reason why they never did really well with them is humans aren't really designed to be in an aircraft that's a tail sitter.
You know, one implication here, David, is that this would, I guess, land to make deliveries. At least that's the way it's kind of portrayed, as opposed to what we tend to see, I think, a little more often when it comes to delivery drones, is that the drone hovers over the delivery point oftentimes and drops by cable or something the package to the ground. So the drone doesn't actually land itself on the ground. With this kind of a design, though, it looks like it's an option when the drone would, in fact, land on the ground or some, you know, platform
which
or surface.
Which might actually be safer if the drone lands, turns off, you recover the package, then it turns back on to fly away.
As long as your pet dog doesn't get to it first.
Well,
right?
We could talk all day about the problems with package delivery, you know?
I know.
There's so much that can go wrong, but
one other item in this article is, and we'll just mention this kind of in passing, I guess, is that at the same time, there was another Amazon patent published, and this is for a system for determining the center of gravity for the delivery drone's payload. Now, the idea here is that the drone could then actually adjust the position of the payload. In other words, it would be movable within the drone, rails or something, I guess, to balance the drone in flight. And that's kind of an interesting concept. There's even some provisions made, I think, in this patent for packages or payloads that are maybe have loose contents that could shift in flight. And then maybe the drone is actually able to compensate for that and maintain stable flight.
Well, if it's going to be taking off vertically and flying horizontally, you're going to need to pack it really, really well in foam, or it's going to have to move. I mean, that's given what they're proposing here. I don't know what else they can do. They're going to have some gyro-stabilized thing or pack it like we used to pack things at Franklin Mint, which makes it basically bulletproof because it was so packed in foam. So we'll see. I'm sure that we'll be talking more as Amazon goes on. They're clearly not stopping on this package delivery. They're going to keep working on it until they find something. And Max, you probably need to do your normal patent disclaimer that you do on Airplane Geeks.
Oh, that's right. Just because someone is awarded a patent doesn't mean that it's actually ever going to get built.
Yeah, I mean, Max is very good at that because we talked a lot about patents on Airplane Geeks, and some of them you sort of scratch your head and go, nah, that ain't going to ever happen. So let's talk about converting human capital for planning workforces. We talk a lot on Airplane Geeks about pilot shortages. Well, the Army and the Air Force evidently have UAV pilot shortages. Not good, huh, Max?
Yeah, this is a report from the U.S. Government Accountability Office that's not very complimentary of the progress that the Air Force and the Army are making. So Government Accountability Office says, quote this, the Air Force and the Army have not fully applied four of the five key principles for effective strategic human capital planning for managing pilots of unmanned aerial systems that are important for resolving the Air Force's pilot shortages and the Army's training shortfalls. So we have in this article these five key principles and a scoring. And the Air Force scores applied for one of them and partially applied for the other four, the same for the Army.
If you look at the principles, the first one was involve top senior leaders, employees, and stakeholders. The Army Air Force actually got a fully implied. The Army got a partial applied. Develop strategies tailored to address gaps in critical skills and competencies. The Air Force partially applied the principle to tailor its strategy to address gaps and shortages in UAS pilots by such as using temporary personnel. As of March 2016, 37% of the personnel filling UAS pilot positions are temporarily assigned manned aircraft pilots. The Army partially applied the second principle because its strategy is not fully tailored to address its shortages in unit training. So both of them are clearly working on stopgap measures and not looking forward. They're too busy trying to fill the existing positions and not looking forward to solving the problem.
Another item that the report talks about is sort of the lack of evaluation as to what extent civilians could be used as UAS pilots. Both services, they note, are using private sector contractors in some cases, but they really haven't done, according to this report, the proper cost analysis to take a look at the effectiveness of that solution. But other principles that are part of this report: monitor progress towards meeting human capital goals, build capability to support human capital strategies using flexibilities, and determine the critical skills and competencies needed. And the Air Force and the Army are both kind of lacking in those areas.
And the last one's probably really important, you know, the determine critical skills and competencies. You can't hire somebody if you don't know what they're supposed to do and or what talents you need to look at. Now, we've talked about the Air Force having enlisted personnel fly drones, but there's the whole issue that they're not officers, so they're not allowed to fly weaponized drones. Now, the Army has less weaponized drones. They do have the Gray Eagle, which is a version of the Predator, but most of their drones are surveillance, so you might be able to get civilians to assist. UAVs are not going away, and it doesn't seem like the Air Force and the Army, they tacitly are acknowledging the issue, but not fully engaging in what they need to do to get their fleets up and running.
Yeah, at least according to the GAO. Now, you know, as an independent auditing agency, of course, it's relatively easy to come in and look at somebody who's trying to solve a very complex problem and say, okay, so here's what you're not doing, here's what you're not doing, that, you know, there's what you're not doing. From the other side, it's easy to say, all right, you know, you try doing this, you know, we're working as hard as we can. So I don't know that the services are, you know, negligent, certainly, or even, you know, deficient in their efforts to solve these problems. I think that for sure it's a very difficult problem to try to solve. So I guess what I'm saying, David, is maybe I'd cut him a little bit of slack at this point.
Yeah, you also sound like you're talking from experience. We both of us have come from an auditing industry, and sometimes you have to scout. The auditors tend to be by the book, and sometimes you have to not look around the book or throw the book out completely out the window to get something done. So I think Max and I have some sympathy about the Army and the Air Force getting their act together. But the time is going to come where they're going to have real shortages and real crises. And then it's going to be, it might be too late. So, but let's talk about other things. Tiny little mosquito tracking drones that could save lives. This was from thedrive.com. Microsoft in 2015 announced Project Premonitions, which envisions drones that can detect mosquito breeding areas. So mosquito-sized drones finding mosquitoes.
The reason that Microsoft is looking at this issue, it's a social issue, really. It's trying to address things like detecting, you know, the Zika virus and, you know, other viruses, other things that...
Now, just say it, mosquitoes and waterborne diseases are a certain Bill Gates. I don't know what he has to do with Microsoft, but that's one of his pet goals in life.
Which is fine. I mean, that's great. I love it. Someone that's got a lot of money can direct that at dealing with a social issue. So that's what they're trying to do here. In June of last year, 2016, Microsoft actually formed a group called the Aerial Informatics and Robotics Group, or AIR Group. And what they're trying to do is develop these autonomous drones that can take advantage of machine intelligence, or AI. We're hearing a lot about that these days. Robotics and human-centered computation. So this is kind of another, I guess, David, another drones for good story.
Yep, we like those. Okay.
Can't avoid it.
If you don't want to hear a slightly political conversation, skip ahead about 3 minutes. But let's talk Bloomberg.com. Drone industry fears Trump turbulence in rule-expanding flights.
We see the Trump administration has started off with a couple of actions. There was a freeze on new regulations, and then President Trump signed an executive order that requires that for every new regulation, two old ones must be identified for elimination. So we know the drone industry, the unmanned aircraft industry, we need regulations now. That's what we keep looking for.
We don't have enough regulations to get rid of to get new ones.
So the question is, what does it mean? What does it mean for the FAA in terms of implementing and creating regulations for things like flights over people, for things that deal with package delivery and all of these sort of things? I think the president is looking at a situation where, in his perception, and in the case of many others, where industry is over-regulated, and that's fine, except that here we have an industry that everyone would agree, I think, that is under-regulated. And so what's going to happen to us?
Not to mention we have a new Department of Transportation secretary who's in charge of the FAA. So we don't know what we don't know yet. I mean, it's going to be interesting. I was trying to think that this year was going to be a year without a lot of regulation and lawyer speak, but it's going to be different. We don't know what we don't know yet. Definitely read this article. It's going to be interesting. I don't know how we get rid of regulation to create new regulation because we don't have that much regulation. So this is going to be an exception to the rule, and we'll see what happens.
We'll be talking about this some more. You can count on it.
We'll try to be as apolitical about it as possible. All right, but let's talk about regulation. We've talked about not knowing what the FAA can do, but believe it or not, the FAA gave a waiver to fly a drone in Class B airspace over an airport.
That's right. In this case, the airport was generally considered to be the busiest airport
in the world,
in the United States at least. Is it the world as well? It could be.
It's always in the top one or two in the world. What we're talking about is Hartsfield-Jackson, Atlanta International Airport, or as you'd see it on Facebook and Twitter, LaToya, Hartsfield-Jackson, Atlanta International Airport, and Nail Salon.
What?
That's a tribute to our friends Dan Webb and Henry Hartevelt, who coined that. But a drone could do something that a manned aircraft could also do, but at much more cost and much more angst.
3D robotics has been conducting seven flights on January 10th this year at the airport. And the reason is that there are a couple of four-story parking structures that have been designated for demolition, and they've been flying, collecting data to support the demolition project. Like you said, David, they could do this with a manned aircraft. I guess that means a helicopter, but at much greater expense. And they've been using 3D robotics drones to conduct this. So it's great. It's an example of how you can use a drone safely under the right conditions in the nearby vicinity of an airport for a good and valuable purpose.
I would be curious to see what the technical aspects of the flight was. How did they work with the control tower? Hmm. How did they interact with, you know, the ground transport and et cetera? Now, if there were parking garages, they probably weren't so near the terminals, but they might be. You know, I think it would be very interesting. And if anybody from 3D Robotics listens to the show, we'd love to have you on. Or if anybody else knows how this worked with the busiest airport in the world, that's a testament to everybody. So good to 3D Robotics, good to Atlanta, and good to the FAA for allowing it to happen and proving that, you know, we as an industry can do things right and do things safe.
That's right. A video of the week, David.
Batbot.
Batbot. This surfaced in our Slack listener team. This is Batbot Wins Flexible Flyer Miles. What we have here, this is a biometric robotic platform. And this was reported in Science Robotics. I'll have a link to that in the show notes as well as to the video. But basically what they've done is they've taken or they've constructed what amounts to a representation of the skeleton of a bat. And then they've sort of stretched, I guess, a silicone membrane over that. So this thing really does look a lot like a bat. And it flies like a bat as well.
Well, and it's kind of cool because it's supposed to study bats. So maybe if it looks like a bat and flies like a bat, it will not disturb the other bats it's mixing with.
Yeah, it's very, very interesting. The video is short, but I don't know. I watched it several times because I just couldn't get enough of that.
There was no fuel cell in that.
No, there wasn't.
You know, so it was. So I don't know why you would watch it over and over again. You're just in love with fuel cells.
So this comes from three guys that wrote the paper from the University of Illinois and also from California Institute of Technology in Pasadena. So we'll have some links to not only the video but some of the material associated with it. Fascinating to watch.
Batbot, and we'll have a video a week. Same bat time, same bat channel.
Oh, David.
sorry, Batman Lego movies coming out. You know, I got bat brains. But let's talk about feedback. And this was from Philip. Hi, Max and David. I've enjoyed both your podcasts for a long time. I'm a GA pilot and a new UAV owner, having purchased a Phantom 3 Standard at Christmas. I'm also an accountant. I just received an e-newsletter from the Journal of Accountancy. I thought it was an interesting article. Drones set to invade accounting professional, and at this point I'm going to turn it over to my co-host because I can't speak to this.
I think this is interesting because what it does is it sort of lays out for this particular profession, the accounting profession, some sort of background information about drones, what they are, why they're big, and how big they're going to become. And it also suggests that, you know, as a profession that supports, in many cases, businesses that are going to make use of drones, that they need to be aware of them and, you know how to handle them from, well, from the, you know, the accounting position, from the financial accounting standpoint. So when we look at the technologies being developed, you know, we tend to think of things kind of narrowly. And this is an example, this sort of points out that the impact is on more than just the companies that create these technologies, the companies that sell these technologies, and just broadly the companies that use the technologies. But this stuff also impacts at a detail level, or it can, professions, people's jobs that really don't have anything to do with drones at all. But they need to become aware of them and know how to handle them, and in this case, account for them. So thanks to Philip for sending that in. It's fascinating. We'll have a link to that in the show notes.
So I guess, Max, with that, we should probably wrap this show up.
That's right. We want to thank all of you for listening. This has been episode 181 of the UAV Digest. As always, you can find us at theuavdigest.com, and you can go straight to the show notes for this episode by going to theuavdigest.com/181.
And of course, we'd love for you to join our Slack listener team. You can do that by going to theuavdigest.com/team, or you can just send us an email to feedback@theuavdigest with your name and your email address, and we can add you to the team. There's a lot of good conversations going on and a lot of stories that we don't cover, but we have discussions about, and there's always something going on there. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/theuavdigest, or you can become watch our Twitter feed, which is @UAVDigest. You can email us at feedback@theuavdigest.com. And of course, leave us some feedback at iTunes or Stitcher or Google Play. And you could always get some swag at our Cafe Press store or become a patron of the show at patreon.com. All of those links you can find again at our homepage, theuavdigest.com. So with that, I'm going to say this is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thanks for listening.
This episode was sponsored in part by Unmanned Systems and Solutions. 30 USAS technicians repair all types of drones in their 120,000-square-foot professional drone repair facility. USAS also offers full-service operations consulting and programs for commercial and government users. Visit unmannedsas.com/UAVDigest to learn more about how to get your drone repaired.